Welcome to our Sport Fuels Life podcast, where we're bringing you interviews with coaches and athletes at the top of their game.
This is a community to support coaches, athletes, and fans who share a passion for making the world a better place through athletics.
We are your hosts. I'm Megan.
And I'm Scott.
Welcome to Sport Fuels Life. For many of us, sports can be an outlet and our identity. It's a place where we can chase better versions of ourselves while also learning so many valuable life lessons.
But what happens when the sport we love is taken away from us sooner than we had planned?
Today, we hear from Chris Norton, former NCAA football player who suffered a debilitating spinal cord injury during a college football game. He overcame extremely difficult odds that he would ever walk again.
Now, he's a world-class speaker, author, and father of six who continues to inspire others through his message that happiness is not measured in steps and that life is as rich as the lives that you enrich.
All right. Well, here on Sport Fuels Life today, we have us joining us, Chris Norton. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This will be fun.
Awesome. Well, so we know that you have a super inspiring story to share with us today. And I guess before we even get into that, let's just hear a little bit about you and your background and how you got into sports.
Yeah, growing up, my parents always loved sports. So just kind of seeing their joy for the games of anything, like they could be card games, board games, just like competition. I think in general, and I really gravitated towards that. Like I just loved competing. So I played lots of basketball, football, running track, baseball. So, I mean, any sport I could get involved with, I was involved with. My dad was always the coach. He coached everything. And if he didn't know anything about like soccer, for instance, he was our soccer coach. He never even played soccer. But he was really organized. He loved just being a part of it and encouraging. So that was always kind of a bonding thing too, with especially my dad through sports. But I was a middle child, had two sisters, grew up in a small town in Iowa, just outside of Des Moines. And just, I don't know, that's kind of, sports was my life growing up. Like it was always the next tournament, the next competition, the practice. My whole life kind of centered around it.
So you dabbled in a lot of different sports. You had a family of competition on a regular basis, and you found your knack and you really got excited and focused towards sports. What was what's something that drew you towards your favorite sport in particular, which was football?
I think with football, what I really loved about it was the physicality of it. Like I've always been kind of just like an easy going guy, peaceful. But then all of a sudden you kind of put on the shoulder pads and the helmet and you have permission to hit somebody as hard as you can. I like that. Like that was really fun for me. I went from being this really just laid back, easy going person to just flying around the field, hitting people as hard as I could. I remember my dad drove and a couple other parents would drive four of us friends to another town to compete in their tackle football league. We didn't have a tackle football league in our town. And so they would take turns going to this out of town place. And I was really undersized. It was like sixth grade. I just grew up slowly. Everybody was taller than me. The girls were all taller than me. But that didn't like stop my toughness. I was still middle linebacker for our tackle football team. And I just loved keeping track of how many tackles I had. That was always something my favorite part. I didn't care about the touchdowns or anything like how many balls did I catch, or it was always how many tackles did I have. And just kind of flying around, making big plays. So I just early on, I knew this was a lot of fun. I loved defense. But yeah, you just kind of could flip on a switch, because I always felt like with basketball, another favorite of mine, I felt the more emotionally I got into the game, the poorly I played, I would then end up fouling, or I would you know, miss a shot, when you like try like too hard, it's almost like you can fail, versus kind of, you kind of need that peaceful equilibrium balance to, I think, play at your highest level. But like football, I always felt like you didn't have to have that equilibrium balance. You could always, it could be high energy, full speed, lots of emotion, nonstop, and it's almost encouraged. And so I don't know, it's just like a different side of myself that I could kind of lean into that I never did outside of the game.
Yeah, so I guess you're saying it's almost like basketball, there was a little bit more finesse to it, but football, it's kind of like you can just go as hard as you want and it's most likely going to pay off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But basketball is like, okay, calm yourself down. Like, it's not going to, you're going to end up doing something stupid if you're let your emotions get the best of you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed your point, though. You were able to, you know, you're kind of a mellow, calm guy, you know, easygoing, and then all of a sudden you were able to find a new outlet, per se, of emotions. Something that I can relate to that. Definitely, I'm not a very emotional guy or outwardly emotional guy, and having that opportunity and that outlet to let anything new happen, it's a great experience. And you know, just one more point of sports being whether it's basketball or football, may not be the same for everybody, finding that opportunity to have something that gives you a new outlet. And then before we get into the meat of it, I guess your dad coached you in everything, which I think is super inspiring. I love that concept. I'm also a coach, we both coach sports, and learning the event or learning the sport is one thing, but then coaching and the art of coaching is a whole nother aspect of it. So what can you say, I guess, about growing up having your dad as your coach, both some goods and maybe some bads or negatives that maybe changed the way you grew up compared to other people?
Yes, my dad, he grew up in a household too of just athletes and coaches. So his dad was a gym teacher, a coach, his uncle was a coach. They've won state championships for like basketball. Then he was a state champion basketball player and coach himself. But he was really good, like you talked about. For basketball, he knew the ins and outs, but he just knew how to encourage people, how to organize things, like how to just, get the best out of people. And I think that's what he really enjoyed most, was just like reaching the individual and pulling out their best and competing like me. So I'd say, you know, the plus was the bonding, the connection with my dad and I, and I trusted, I believed in him. Like, he really cared and he knew what he was doing, which I then listened. I really tried to soak in everything he had to tell me. And he was somebody that, you know, all my friends enjoyed having around, and they also enjoyed him having a coach, because he did have that balance of, you know, respect, but also having fun. And coaching, and he was just really good at that, teetering that line. But now, being the coach's kid, there's higher expectations, and there was definitely higher expectations on me, and expectations I also placed on myself too. And so that was where, like, we would collide. Was something I had to really teach him and coach him on this part. He had some of the nastiest like looks. Like, you knew what he was thinking or feeling by looking at him in the middle of a game. And for me, like, I needed encouragement. Like, I needed confidence. Like even if I'm making a mistake or struggling, like, getting on me doesn't bring out the best of me. It's more like, hey, like, I still believe in you. You can do this. Kind of encouragement helps. I just, there's a lot of times where I'm like, even if he wasn't coaching me, dad, like, every time I look over you, you got this, you know, resting angry face going on. Like, can you like do something else, or not even, like, I don't know, like, leave the gym. Like, I need your encouragement. And so he did take that to heart, and eventually was much better at just showing encouragement and positivity. And I really thrived off of that. One moment in particular that was really kind of defining for me, I felt like, when I was about 11 years old, we were leaving a basketball tournament. I had one of the worst weekends of basketball of my life. I was missing my shot, turned the ball over, hurting my team more than I was helping them. And I knew I was capable of so much more. And then, to make matters worse, I had to ride home with my coach, who was also my dad. And so I'm avoiding the angry glares from the rearview mirror, staring out the window. Get home, you know, kick my shoes off. I go straight to the couch, watch TV, play video games, just trying to pretend and ignore my problems or even there. And I'm thinking about just, man, when I was taller, faster, or if my parents had more money, we could have our own gym. Then I'd be a really good basketball player. Well, eventually my dad, he sits next to the couch talking about the weekend. I'm giving him all the excuses for why my shot was off that day. And he listened to me. But then he tells me something that I'll never forget. He says, Chris, if you don't like where you are, then do something about it. If you don't like where you are, then do something about it. As obvious as those words are, but for whatever reason, that moment, it clicked for me. Why feel sorry for yourself when you're not willing to do anything to change? Blaming your circumstances isn't going to help. If you want to get better results, then you have to get better. There's no shortcut in life. So I grabbed my ball, I went outside, and I shot baskets until it was dark. But this was kind of like, I feel like a big stepping stone for me of just taking more ownership for my outcomes and just recognizing that nothing in life is guaranteed is going to exactly come your way, but you can work for it and you can get better. So that was just kind of a how I then handled any sort of challenge and problems. Like, well, how can I fix this? How can I make this better versus just wasting my energy on and pouting? And I think that would then later on play huge, paid huge dividends as it would really help me through my spinal cord injury.
Wow. Yeah. So that's really cool that kind of impacted you at an early age. You already had that mentality built in. And so you got to practice that, you know, all the way through high school into college. And so I guess let us know, how did you get in? Did you always know that you wanted to play football in college? Was that always on your radar, or how did that come about?
So during football season, football was my first love. But outside of football season, it was actually basketball. I played lots of basketball. Okay. So I was actually thinking I was going to do basketball in college. But as it got closer and realizing I was actually probably, I was better at football than I was basketball. I love both. And I also, my rationale going to football was, well, I'm probably only going to get 4 more years. There's a very low chance that I'll ever play professionally, but I could always continue to play basketball. I could even, they even entertain me playing both sports in college at the same school. I'm like, okay, I could always have basketball as like a outlet, a fall to. And basketball, there's dribbling, there's shooting, there's beating agility, there's weightlifting, where I feel like football is a lot of, not to take anything away from football, but there's just a lot more just strength and hitting people and having that fearlessness that kind of had natural instincts with the game. So it just was a little bit easier, less work on my part to be kind of an undersized point guard for basketball. But anyway, that's my rationale. Play earlier for football. I was a little bit more skilled. I could also just enjoy the last 4 years of hitting people. But obviously my life had a different plan for me than the plan I had for myself.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing the story that you're about to share. But I guess if you don't mind running through the accident, the game, and then the experience and emotional trauma that you felt both right after, and then we'll keep going from there. But yeah, pretty devastating accident.
Yeah, it was, and it really also though just changed my whole, I mean, it upended my whole world, and for a lot of different reasons. But like entering college, you know, I thought to live the good life, I needed to accomplish these certain things. So what was important to me as an 18-year-old was, you know, being this All-American football player, get a business degree, a high-paying job, marry the girl of my dreams, and then make enough money to buy a lake house. Or better yet, the girl of my dreams' parents would already own a lake house. And by checking just all these boxes, you know, happiness would be guaranteed. You know, I just thought I just had this, the perfect plan. Well, then on October 16, 2010, my freshman year, the sixth game of the season, third quarter, we're mounting this comeback against one of our in-division rivals. I have my family in the stands. Beautiful fall day. Perfect football weather. I run out to the field for the kickoff, and the kicker huddles us up. He calls the play, mortar kick right, which simply is a short, high-arching kick to the right side of the field. And I don't know why we didn't just call it kick right, because our kicker was so bad that every kick was short and low arching. Anyway, I'm excited because I'm on the right side of the field. So this is my chance to really make an impact. The ball is kicked. I sprint downfield as hard as I can go. I see an opening for him. My instincts are telling me, okay, the ball carrier needs to try to run through that gap, but I'm going to stop him. I'm going to drive my shoulder so hard through his legs that hopefully he'll drop the ball. I go for it. I collide into him at full speed, full force, but I mistime my tackle by a split second. Instead of taking him down with my shoulder, I hit him head on. The next thing I know, I'm laying face down on the ground, motionless, listening to the sound of players crashing to each other above me. The whistle blows. The pile clears off. I'm completely conscious. I'm in no pain. I just can't move. And as hard as I try to push through the ground, nothing in my arms are working, or my leg. I can't even feel a thing. The athletic trainers come out and they're like, "Chris, are you still here? Are you still with us? Like, can you hear me?" Like, "Yeah, I can hear you fine. I can't move for some reason. Maybe it's a bad stinger, like a pinched nerve, and we just got to get a few minutes before my feeling of movement comes back." And as I'm waiting, there's no changes to my body. They carefully roll me onto my back. They start asking some more questions. "Hey, Chris, try making a fist with your hand." I tried and nothing happened. I couldn't even feel my arm or where my arm was at. Then they asked me, "Well, Chris, can you feel us touching your leg?" "No, I don't feel a thing." And I keep asking like different questions like this, and the answer was no, and I'm getting more frustrated. Okay, I've been waiting here long enough. What's going on? Why am I not getting off this field? This is embarrassing. I was always kind of the tough guy. I'm not going to get a bunch of athletic trainer or medical attention. I'm going to, move on and not stop the game. But I hated that the game was stopped for me. Everyone's waiting for me to get up. And I just kept telling myself it's going to be fine. Things always kind of worked out for me. I never had a life-altering injury or, I kind of got through my first 18 years of life pretty much unscathed. And so I'm thinking it's going to be fine. This isn't part of the plan. But then as the EMTs got involved, they radio in for a helicopter. And that's when I know, okay, this is bad. This is really bad. I've been to a lot of football games and I've never once seen a time when they had a radio in for a helicopter. So I close my eyes and I try to escape my reality. I tried to disassociate myself from the situation as if it wasn't even happening, just to protect myself and not allow myself to emotionally go into like how scary this is. And then, fly me out, perform emergency surgery, figure out that I have a severe spinal cord injury and a 3% chance of ever feeling or moving below the neck. That was the beginning of a whole new world.
Yeah. Life. Freshman year. Yeah. 18 years old. That's such a show-stopping story, I guess, for lack of better terms. I mean, just listening to you tell the story and describe it, you have so much vivid detail of the accident. And, you know, again, thanks for sharing that. We've gone through our fair share of injuries as athletes ourselves, but, you know, we're thankful and happy to be here talking to you about it. So, thanks.
Yeah.
But,
I'm glad I can talk about it.
Yeah.
I get to tell it, thousands of times. I get the privilege to travel the country as a motivational speaker and, go into all the hard lessons that have come out in the last now 13 years.
Yeah. It sounds, obviously it's a huge shock. That's very traumatic, very scary. So I'm sure that was a dark time for you, kind of processing that. But it's cool to see that you've come out on the other side and what has probably been the seemingly worst thing to happen in your life. I've done a little research on you, and it seems like it's turned into something that's actually really positive. And I think it's really cool to see that you've taken something like this and you've even made yourself a better person through it. And here you are, you have a book and a movie about this story, and you're doing, you know, speaking engagements around the world, just, you know, sharing your story and inspiring others. So I guess we're moving forward here in the story. So you're in the hospital and you've gotten this emergency surgery. I'm sure your parents and your family that was all out watching you at the game is probably pretty nervous at this time, but you know, so you have the 3% chance that you're going to be able to move your body below the neck. And didn't you have a doctor who said that you wouldn't be able to move your legs at all? And that kind of was a turning point for you.
Yeah. I think there was a doctor. I was about the fifth weekend and I've been making some progress, moving my arms a little bit, regaining sensation throughout my body, but I still was unable to move anything in my legs. I'm still open, praying, working toward maybe being a walk one day. That was a hope of mine I was clinging on to, but the clock was ticking. Like it kind of comes to that point in outside of your weeks outside your injury that you kind of know one way or another, and it was kind of rubbing up against that time. And I wake up to a brand new sensation though on my left big toe. I can feel the crisp, cold air, like stronger on this spot than any other part of my body. I get excited. This is a sign. Like something special is happening. I can just tell, and I cannot wait to tell my neurologist about it later that day when he comes in for one of his weekly round visits. He comes to my room. I start telling him the great news. And as I'm telling him, I could just tell from his body language, he wasn't reciprocating. Like he didn't really care. And so I asked, well, can you take my shoe and sock off to get a closer look? Maybe you can tell me like what's happening, because there is something happening. But Chris, you're experiencing a phantom feeling. These phantom feelings are quite common with individuals with spinal cord injuries. When you start experiencing these new sensations in your body, it's easy to trick yourself into thinking it's progress, but it's not. And that's why we call them the phantom feelings. Well, you know, this feels different. I'm really in tune to my body. Just being an athlete, I feel like I'm really aware of what's happening. And this is different from anything else I've felt. It was, Chris, look, you're never going to move anything, your legs, ever again. Turns and walks out like, no big deal. And under 2 minutes, this man had just crushed my dreams and everything I've been working day and night to achieve. And thankfully, I had my dad there, actually. And he had to compose himself for a little bit. I've never seen my dad cry until this moment. And with tears in his eyes, he says, Chris, do not let anyone determine your outcome but you. And I look back at tears in my eyes and say, I never will. And not even a week later, on Thanksgiving morning of all mornings, with my family by my side, I wiggle that exact left big toe that buzzkill doctor said I would never move again. Mm-hmm. And I was pumped. I was so fired up. I was telling all my nurses and therapists that day, you go find that doctor, who I like to call Dr. Phantom. You bring Dr. Phantom in here and tell him to phantom this as I wiggle my toe in his face. Fortunately, he was gone that day for Thanksgiving, but it worked out for the best. I might have been a little too fired up and would have said something I'd regret later on. But that toe wiggle, it became so much more. I started to get strength in my quads, hamstrings, even able to stand up with assistance. So it was a huge turning point in my recovery when my legs really started to get stronger.
Yeah, I love the willpower. I love the determination. You know, telling, getting told what you can and can't do. That's one part of sports that the true greats just say, no, I'm going to do it anyway because I want to make a difference in my life and my outcome. So, you know, I know our listeners will relate to that. I know we can relate to that. So it's so motivational to hear you go through these struggles and be able to put yourself back in a position of success with your experience through sports. So the rehab process goes, you get the toe wiggle, you start getting some strength back in your legs, and I know it's motivating to you, but tell us kind of what your goal, what your focus was, what your purpose was after that little time period. You know, you get this little sign of hope, and then what's next?
For me, it was always, what's next? Like, what else can I get back, and how much of it can I get back? So it was definitely one thing to the next. And, you know, thankfully though, I had therapists and my family that would help me celebrate those milestones because, you know, for me, I noticed that I would quickly just brush right through a milestone. Every single time I had a milestone, I wouldn't even celebrate it. What's the next milestone I can get? But it's good to recognize those victories because it's those little moments of victory that kind of keep the fuel and the fire burning and going to go to the next thing and the next thing. But yeah, it was always, you know, eventually hopefully to walk and just be more independent in my wheelchair. I was using a big power wheelchair at the time and I wanted to wheel myself with my arms. So there's different milestones like that. But what I really had to learn too is to stay present and not get too caught up in the future or thinking about the past. And a moment that really kind of helped me recognize this actually happened the second week while I was in the rehab unit at the hospital. At this point, I'm able to move my arms a little bit. And in the OT gym, I was working on curling my left arm to my shoulder, and I was just able to curl it by itself, which was a big accomplishment. And then my OT grabs a 1/2 pound ankle weight and Velcro straps it around my wrist to try to curl up. I'm looking at this 1/2 pound like it's a 50-pound dumbbell. This is like, I'm struggling getting my own body weight up. And so I'm lifting, I'm shaking and struggling. And it just felt like I was back in the weight room, and I get it to my shoulder. My family's watching me and my OT, and they all kind of let out this exhilarating cheer and excitement of like, you did it. Like, wow, like you curled that 1/2 pound weight. And then it just hits me though. 2 weeks ago, I was curling 35-pound dumbbells, and now celebrating a measly 1/2 pound ankle weight. And it just crushed me in that moment. It just took away all the progress, the game, the victory of that moment because I was stuck comparing to the path of what was once pretty much my old life. And it was in that moment of kind of facing reality of realizing I'm going to have to grieve the able-bodied athlete Chris of the past and start kind of accepting this new life. And also that I need to stay present, that the more I went back to the path before injury, the more it just kind of destroyed me and killed my motivation. And then every single time I thought too far in the future of, will it always be like this? Will I always be exact kind of where I'm at right now? It also felt like an instrumental way to go. Like I had so far to go to reach my goals. And what I found is, you know, what can I do now? Like, what can I do today? And just asking those questions that kind of kept my mind in the moment, in that current session, in that current rep, really helped me to take those baby steps and then also celebrate those baby steps, no matter how insignificant it may feel or compare to the path or where I want to be. But in that moment, it matters, and to recognize that it matters and to keep that momentum going. So I think that goes with any athlete, any coach, of just staying present, recognizing the milestones and the victories and celebrating that and not getting lost in comparing about what could have been or what should have been or where you have to go, but to keep along the path to where you ultimately want to be.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people, they struggle with. Now you had to experience it on a much larger scale. I think a lot of athletes and people, they have to struggle with this expectation that they have of themselves. And in your case, your expectations were drastically changed of what you expected yourself to be capable of and also where you wanted to go. And I think the same goes for athletes or anyone with a goal. It's so easy to look at, you know, what they have been or what they want to accomplish, even in a game. You know, it's so key to stay in the moment. And it's so much easier said than done. Do you have any daily routines or any, like, anything that sticks in your mind that's a good tool to help yourself come back to that mentality of, I need to stay in the moment? How can I find that right now?
Yeah, I think one, being aware of it, it's huge starting ground of like, okay, I'm thinking about the past, or I'm thinking about the future, or how far I have to go. So that's a huge starting point of wanting, desiring to be in the present and being aware of that. And then for me, I like to just ask myself the question of, well, what can I do? Well, what can I do today? What can I do right now? And what, just asking myself, what can I do? And that just really helps me stay right here in the moment and do something concrete, something tangible, really helped me stay distracted from those external things that try to like suck away my energy and my drive. And staying focused on the task at hand really helped me a lot. And so I just kept asking myself those questions. I would ask my PTs and OTs that question. I would have my family write up workouts and pin them on my wall and different exercises I can be doing, so that anytime I kind of, my mind was straying off course, it was just, okay, well, let's get back to what can I be doing? Like, what's going to help move the needle to get to where I want to go? Because something I also knew, that I didn't want to get like a year out and think back, wow, why did I waste my time, you know, pouting? Why did I waste my time watching TV or getting distracted with whatever? Like, I don't want to look back and have regrets. That was a huge thing for me. Like, I'm going to do everything in my power so that when I do get a year, 5 years out from now, I'm going to be happy for how far I've come, because I know I worked my absolute hardest and I have nothing to regret. And I gave it all. And that's all you can ask of yourself, is doing everything in your power to get as far as you can. And you kind of let, you know, God and fate, you know, take its course. But just to ask the most of yourself and the best of yourself, I think there's like a piece of that from doing that. And I think where I'm at now, 13 years, I have great peace of who I am, where I'm at, and how hard I've worked. And then I've also come to have learning the strength and the power of acceptance too, of, yeah, you accept what's in your control, but it's really important to accept what's out of your control. That was something I had to learn, because I want to fix everything. I want to improve everything. I love going after things that I can improve and fix, but what if you can't? Like, what if you literally, there's nothing you can do about the situation. Now that's hard. Now that's a skill that I had to learn over time of when you can't fix it. I've always had like a fix it mentality. It's just how I've always operated, which has its benefits. But then when you can't, you want to run away from it or avoid it and act like it's not there. So just being able to learn to face things that you can't change, but then there's great healing and growth from that, because once you know you can't change it, then you learn how to adapt and be flexible and get creative.
Ooh, so many things to relate to, a plethora of knowledge there that can help so many people out. One thing I'll point out is in today's day and age, mental health is extremely present. But in 2010, 2011, 2012, there wasn't as much light shed on this, and you had to go through these experiences in such a different time frame. But at the same time, I feel like it gave you almost like a knight's armor for where we are now in 2019, 2020, COVID, 2021, 2022. You've already been through so many different things, so many struggles, and learned so many lessons, both about yourself and who you want to be, who you want to become, and your family and support and your community that you have. These lessons, I guess, do you really think that there's a way people can learn them without experience? The way you've experienced it, like sports are helpful, and that's why we do part of this podcast, is to help people learn faster. But you know, you've went through the ringer more than anybody, in a big degree. So do you think that there's anything that can really, any advice that you can help encourage people learn these lessons before it's so in their face?
Yeah, I think to your point, back in 2010, mental health, the conversation was different back then and how you viewed it. So this was completely not accurate, but this was just my own belief in 2010, was like anxiety, depression, like that's just a bad attitude. That's not true. I don't believe that now, but like that was my belief of like, oh, you just gotta change your attitude. That's not true at all. And there's ways that you can deal with mental health and cope and process it. And something that I didn't have the skills at the time was processing it. Like I just mentioned, I was the move on, distract, fix it, go, 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 go. But there is a place and a time where you do need to face things and grieve and actually and to feel it. And that's okay to feel frustrated, to feel sad. And I didn't just, I love my parents to death. They were the best parents I could ever ask for. But we just, that wasn't really in our culture of our family to talk about sad things and to process it. And it was always like, let's roll up our sleeves and let's get to work. Let's go, 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 go. And now I've been learning, now that I'm older and I have kids of my own, of how the importance of having a place and a space to talk about hard things and to feel it. And it's okay to feel. There's no weakness with sharing that you're struggling, that you need help. And I think there's great strength in that. So I think that's one thing I now hope to get across with my presentations, or anytime people talk about what I've gone through, is recognizing there is times and place to process and to grieve and have a space for that. That wasn't how I operated before. It was always, like I said, go, go, go. But now I've realized the strength in that. And then once you have a place to process and to feel those things, then get to work. Absolutely. Like there's, you definitely got to, you can't stay in that place forever, but you also can't just skip it either. And I think it seems like it's harder for men than most to feel like a safe to be vulnerable and to acknowledge that you're struggling. And I hope more people can get to that place or get to that relationship or find a therapist, a counselor, a safe person to talk to and not let things bottle up. Because when things get bottled up, that's when it leads to toxic thoughts and behaviors.
Well, you've certainly been through a lot, and what you have overcome is incredible. And it's everything has led you here to where you are today. So I guess if you could share a little bit with us and our listeners as to what life looks like for you now. I know you've got a family, you've got your book published and a Netflix documentary on you too. So yeah, just share a little bit with us about kind of what life looks like now.
Yeah, and just how we kind of, this books and the film and speaking, you know, it all kind of was a slow build of just continuing with my recovery and my therapy, just maximizing as much as I could. I eventually walked across the stage of my college graduation with the help of my then fiance, Emily. That went viral, got to do lots of fun, just opportunities to encourage others and be on national news. And then a few years later, walking 7 yards on the aisle for a wedding, which again went viral and got to do a lot of neat opportunities just to share our story. And it led to, yeah, the book. So it's called Seven Longest Yards is the book that was published that my wife and I did. And then there's the film 7 Yards that's on Netflix and other streaming channels that you can rent as well. And it's been amazing to have those, especially with television. I can think a lot of people go to television now to escape reality and to distract themselves from what's going on. And so it's really neat to be able to reach people from their bedrooms or their family rooms and right on through a television screen where they're looking for an escape. And I think it can really help encourage people who are struggling, especially if those who aren't readers. So there's two ways to do that. And then also today, you know, my wife and I, we've fostered 22 children so far in total. We have 5 kids. We live down in South Florida. Busy day, busy life with lots of kids. Full-time motivational speaker, like I mentioned. I also run a nonprofit called the Chris Norton Foundation. We have a family wheelchair camp that we host every year. We're looking to expand that camp. It's free for the entire families to come do just fun, adaptive camp-style activities. We have an adaptive zip line, horseback riding, laser tag. It's just tons of fun for these families to come form community, be more resilient, and just come together and smile and see what you can do instead of focus on what you can't. So we got that going on. Actually, camp at the time of this recording is next week. So I'm looking forward to that. We're flying out to participate. It's my favorite week of the year. But yeah, so that's kind of life in a nutshell right now. Starting to do now a little bit more, looking at more television opportunities as well to try to reach more people and inspire others. That's my whole mission in life, is to help people see the possibilities in their life and what they can do, and understand the power that we all have within us, that we're just more stronger, more resilient than we realize. And to really tap into that is something that is really fires me up of how can I help people tap into their own power that I know it's there.
Wow, I love that. And it sounds like you have a lot of really exciting things going on in your life. So I'm really happy to see that you've kind of come out the other side and you've just got a really cool life going on now. So that's awesome. Did you have anything else that you wanted to ask?
Yeah, the fulfillment, I guess, the excitement. Would you ever think that you would be, fostering 22 kids and probably more to come in the future?
I never saw that coming, no. You just never know what life has in store. And so that's what makes it really exciting. But something I've definitely have learned from all of this, thinking in the past, like, especially when I was first injured, I thought, you know, life in a wheelchair would be doom and gloom. Like it would be the end. I had this false notion, but I've realized, you know, happiness is not measured in steps or in possessions. It's not about physical strength. We all know people who can run, jump, and swim who aren't happy. So I've really come to realize that your life is as rich as the lives you enrich. And so that's been a mission of mine and my wife, to enrich as many lives as possible. And it's amazing how fulfilling that is for yourself when it's not about you, but it's amazing how it comes back your way. But on those same lines, like, you also have to be willing to not only give help, but receive help too. It needs to come full circle. It's something that I've come to realize as well, because some people are really good at giving, but they never want to receive anything. Or some people are really good at receiving, but they're not good at giving. But it takes a complete cycle to really fill your life and your spirit up. So that's something that I've learned about fulfillment. And I think that gives me so much joy, is to know that I can make an impact. And when I am struggling, I have no fear or about asking for help.
Wow. Yeah, that is very powerful. Thanks for sharing those. I've definitely got some awesome quotes written down. And I love that, you know, you mentioned happiness is not measured in steps, because it really relates to anyone. I think a lot of athletes kind of tie their identity to how they perform. And no matter who you are, where you are, like, you will retire someday. So, you know, the fact that you're able to just give back and find that satisfaction and that life fulfillment just by enriching the lives of others is something that you can do anytime and for the rest of your life, and live a very, happy life, you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that identity piece, like, that, I struggle with that. I was forced into retirement really early, a lot earlier than I wanted to. And so, yeah, you ask yourself, you know, who am I now? I've always identified as an athlete. That's what I spent my first 18 years of life. I felt like, was, how do I become a better athlete? How do I become stronger, faster, quicker? Now I'm not fast, strong, or quick at all. But being able to apply those same principles and lessons I learned through sports, of working as a team, of just persevering and pushing past the fatigue and your thoughts of, like, okay, I don't know if I can do another one, but then you do another one, and just realizing how much further you can go and push yourself. All the work ethic, it applies to the different areas of life, so you never lose that athlete in you. It's just on a different playing field. It's maybe with a relationship, maybe it's with your work or your job. But I think, though, the more you can, yeah, find those opportunities to serve somebody else, to mentor, to get somebody to smile, I think is a great place to start and to kind of find and re-carve out a new life for yourself. Because I know I certainly did. It took time. It wasn't easy. Still to this day, I miss being, like, an athlete on the field or participating in those kind of competitions. But I've also found, you know, more enriching, deeper things that fill my life up, that can still do the trick outside of just your sport of competition.
Yeah, touching on retirement for athletes is another big one, and also the lessons learned through sports, and you know, there's always opportunities to play something or learn something through other people. So thank you so much for sharing all of your inspirational stories. Unreal, absolutely unreal. And if you have any other thoughts or comments that you want to share with our listeners, or any other personal notes, please feel free. But Chris Norton, that was phenomenal.
Yeah, and I guess on that note, is there a good place for our listeners to follow you, or maybe they want to check out your book? Where's the best place to go for them to maybe learn a little bit more about you or follow your story?
Yeah, I would go to my website, chrisnorton.org. Org, and then I have social media most active, like, one place is like Instagram. But I think the website's a great spot for figure out the books or the movie. Yeah, or follow me online and learn about my family or the foundation. That'd be the best place to go.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you again so much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you today, hearing about your story, and we hope to stay in touch with you in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.